Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, John Russell, and Dorothy Gundy. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, more than 100 scientists have traveled to faraway places to collect wild crop seeds in an effort to help battle climate change. The scientists have been likened to the hero of the Indiana Jones movies. Like him, they have faced dangers from blood-sucking creatures to tigers, and sometimes used elephants for transportation. A report on the project was published last week. It describes the results of a 6-year search to collect thousands of wild seeds. The seeds could be important in feeding a growing human population at a time when rising temperatures are affecting crop production in some areas. The Reuters news agency says the scientists traveled by foot, four-wheeled vehicles, boat, horse, and even elephant to reach faraway areas. They collected 4,644 seed samples of 371 wild relatives of 28 world crops. Many of those wild relatives are said to be endangered. The Crop Trust, a nonprofit organization that works to save different kinds of crops, is directing the project. The group is working in partnership with Britain's Royal Botanic Gardens and Millennium Seed Bank. Additional financial support comes from Norway. The project is believed to be the largest organized international effort yet to collect and protect crops' wild relatives. Hannes Dimpelwolf is a scientist and the head of global initiatives at the Crop Trust. He told Reuters that collecting the seeds was not easy. He noted that scientists faced extreme heat, dust, sweat, and danger from wild animals. He added, "The stories these seed collectors brought back from the field often resemble scenes from an Indiana Jones movie." Scientists that took part in the seed collection project came from 25 countries. Some relatives of widely grown crops have developed so plants can survive severe conditions such as low rainfall, flooding, extreme temperatures, and poor soils. Scientists say the wild crops offer a largely unused source of diversity for protecting crops against climate change. Some crops are threatened because of destruction of forests, climate change, conflict, and expanded cities. Experts say losing this diversity could endanger food security around the world. A United Nations report says that food supplies are under severe threat. The report notes that the number of animal and plant species are quickly disappearing as the world deals with how to feed a rising population. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says that people are depending on fewer species for food. That leaves food production at risk to organisms, disease, lack of rain, and other weather extremes linked to climate change.
The approval of a new citizenship law by India's parliament led to protests that turned violent in northeast India. The Citizenship Amendment Bill would make it easier for non-Muslim minorities from some neighboring countries to seek Indian citizenship. India's upper house of parliament passed the bill 125-105 on Wednesday night. It passed the lower house on Monday. The country's president needs to sign the bill before it becomes law. Thousands of people in Assam state protested the measure on Wednesday and Thursday. The law seeks to give Indian nationality to Buddhists, Christians, Hindus, Jains, Parsis, and Sikhs who fled Bangladesh, Pakistan, and Afghanistan because of religious persecution before 2015. Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Hindu nationalist-led government introduced the bill after an election victory in May. Modi called passage of the bill a landmark day for India. He said the law would help ease the suffering of many who faced persecution for years. Protesters warned that the law would open Assam state to a flood of foreign migrants. Critics have also said the measure goes against India's constitution by not offering protection to Muslims. Police in Assam's main city of Guwahati fired bullets and tear gas against groups of protesters. Demonstrators burned tires and blocked highways and rail lines in protests that continued even after a curfew was declared. Some Indian newspaper opinion writers said the law was an effort by Modi's administration to marginalize India's 200 million Muslims. But Home Minister Amit Shah said when introducing the bill in the upper house that it was not anti-Muslim because it did not affect the existing path to citizenship available to all communities. However, the government has said the law will be followed by a citizenship register. This would require Muslims to prove they were original residents of India to receive citizenship consideration. Several opposition lawmakers who debated the bill in Parliament said the legislation will face legal battles in court. Today marks a dark day in the constitutional history of India, said Sonia Gandhi of the main opposition Congress Party. Passage of the Citizenship Amendment Bill marks the victory of narrow-minded and bigoted forces over India's pluralism, she added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Writer and actor Larry David is behind some of America's most popular television shows, including Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm. The shows often discuss the details of everyday life in a funny way. One time on Curb Your Enthusiasm, David criticized the use of emojis, symbols often used in text messages and internet exchanges.
She texted me.
She texted you. How adorable.
Yeah. Smiley face.
Oh, smiley face. See, I hate that.
Ugh, I told her about the smiley faces. I can't stand it.
And everybody uses them.
On today's report, we will discuss grammar and digital communication. We will talk about emojis and the kinds of words they replace. We will also talk about the different ways people around the world use emojis.
Emojis have their roots in Japan. Their name comes from the Japanese words for picture and characters. They have been common for years in Japanese electronic messages and web pages. Over time, people in other countries came to adopt them too. In 2015, Oxford Dictionaries named the face with tears of joy emoji as the word of the year. You might be asking yourself about the link between emojis and grammar. The first key point is this. Sometimes emojis act as a kind of language to communicate important information about emotions or attitudes. These emotions or attitudes might be difficult to express in writing, yet they are part of the idea the writer wants to send. For example, when people speak to each other, they often use their faces and voices to give a lot of information. The website Emoji Tracker follows all emojis used on Twitter. It lists the most popular emojis on the social media platform. You might not be surprised to learn that some of the most popular emojis have a face. The most popular emoji is still the face with tears of joy. The second most popular emoji, according to Emoji Tracker, is the grinning face with the smiling eyes.
Our second key point is this. Emojis fit into English grammar in certain kinds of ways. And experts think there are limits on how complex emoji grammar can become. A 2019 study by researchers in the Netherlands found that emojis were more likely to replace nouns and adjectives. They were less likely to replace verbs and adverbs. The researchers noted no prepositions or determiners were substituted by emojis. Prepositions refer to words such as in, on, or at. These words often show the location of nouns. Determiners are words such as the or these. They give information about a noun. The study pointed out that emoji-only communication was very simple. One of the reasons is that users cannot change how they present the emojis. Also, vocabulary depends on existing emojis. Expressing feelings or attitudes outside the available choices is difficult.
A 2016 report noted differences in how people around the world use emojis. The researchers found that users from France are more likely to use emojis. The researchers also found that users in France were more likely to use emojis related to hearts, while users from other countries prefer emojis related to faces. While how much these trends may have changed over the past few years is unclear, we bring up this point to get you thinking about how emojis are used in your native language. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm John Russell.
The Making of a Nation, a program in special English. I'm Kay Gallant. Today, Harry Monroe and I continue the story of America's Civil War.
By the autumn of 1864, it appeared that the North would defeat the South in the war between the states. The Southern Army needed men and supplies. There was little hope of getting enough of either to win. The Northern Army was stronger and better equipped, but it too had suffered. Much of the death and destruction was the result of new military technology.
A new kind of bullet had been invented. It was called the mini ball. It made the gun a much more deadly weapon. Before the mini ball, few soldiers could hit a target more than 30 meters away. With the new bullet, they could hit targets more than 150 meters away. Soldiers with such weapons could be put into position behind stone or earth walls. Then it was almost impossible to defeat them.
Most American generals, however, seemed unable to accept this. They continued to use the old methods of attack that had worked before the mini ball was invented. Hundreds or thousands of men were put in long lines across the front of the enemy position. A signal was given. The men began to march forward. When they got close, they fired their guns. Then they ran at the enemy and struck with their knives or hands. The idea was to shock the enemy, frighten him, and make him run away. As generals on both sides learned, this method no longer worked. The attackers were shot down before they could get close enough to hurt the defenders.
After 3.5 years of fighting, hundreds of thousands of Union and Confederate soldiers had been killed or wounded. Still, the war continued. In the East, Union armies were slowly pushing forward toward their main target. That was the Confederate capital at Richmond, Virginia. In the West, Union armies were slowly pushing deeper into Confederate territory. The Western armies were led by General William Sherman.
Sherman had two goals. One was to capture the city of Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta was one of the few remaining industrial cities of the Confederacy. The other goal was to destroy the Confederate army led by General Joe Johnston. Sherman's army was stronger than Johnston's army, but the Confederates usually got into better defensive positions. Sherman refused to attack in such situations. It was easier to march around the Confederates and force them to withdraw. This happened again and again.
Confederate President Jefferson Davis began to believe that General Johnston was afraid to fight. He replaced him with another general. Within 2 days, that general attacked the Union Army. The attack began without enough planning. It was based on false information. It was a disaster. In 11 days of fighting, one-third of the Confederate Army in Georgia was destroyed. The remaining force was too weak to defend Atlanta. The city fell.
After capturing Atlanta, General Sherman fought a series of small battles with a Confederate force across northern Georgia. Then he decided to march to Savannah, a city on the Atlantic coast. Before leaving, his men set fire to the city. Almost all of Atlanta was destroyed. Sherman's army would continue to do this all the way to Savannah, Georgia, 350 kilometers away. It cut a path of destruction more than 100 kilometers wide. This campaign would be known as Sherman's March to the Sea.
Sherman said he wanted to make the people of Georgia suffer. He said he wanted to show the people of the Confederacy that their government could not protect them. Union soldiers stopped at every farm and village. They took food and clothing. They took horses, cows, and other farm animals. What they could not take or did not want, they destroyed. They set fire to houses and farm buildings. They burned crops. They destroyed stores and factories. They burned bridges and pulled up railroad tracks. Day by day, the Union Army of General William Sherman cut and burned its way across Georgia.
The army faced little opposition. Small groups of Confederate horse soldiers struck at the edges of the army, but they did little damage. On December 22, 1864, Sherman reached Savannah. He sent a message to President Abraham Lincoln in Washington. He said, "I beg to present you as a Christmas holiday gift the city of Savannah." Sherman's campaign had cut a great wound in the heart of the Confederacy. All that remained were the states of South Carolina, North Carolina, and Virginia. His march to the sea had a great destructive effect on the spirit of the South.
Sherman's army rested in Savannah for a month. Then, on February 1st, 1865, it began to move north. The goal was to join General Ulysses Grant outside the Confederate capital at Richmond, Virginia. As Sherman's army moved across South Carolina, it destroyed almost everything in sight. The soldiers remembered that South Carolina had been the first state to rebel and leave the Union. They remembered that South Carolina had fired the first shots of the war. This time, against orders, they destroyed the land they left behind. Confederate forces could not stop them.
The same thing happened in the Shenandoah River Valley northwest of Richmond. In the early years of the war, Confederate forces had moved through the valley to strike northern territory. They had invaded Maryland and Pennsylvania and had threatened Washington from there. General Grant decided that the Confederates had used the Shenandoah Valley long enough. He sent some of his men into the valley. he ordered them to destroy everything that might be of use to the enemy. "Eat up, Virginia," he said, "clear and clean as far as you can go." Farms were burned. Crops were destroyed. Farm animals were taken away or killed. Nothing was left that could feed a man or animal. Nothing but blackened earth.
Then General Grant sent General Philip Sheridan into the Shenandoah Valley. Sheridan's army battled its way through the valley in the autumn of 1864. It gained victory after victory against a smaller, weaker Confederate force. By the end of the year, Union troops had complete control of the valley. The only Confederate power that remained was the army of General Robert E. Lee.
With the Shenandoah Valley closed to the Confederates, food supplies fell very low. There was almost nothing to feed the soldiers in Lee's army. Wagons would go out each day in search of food. They returned almost empty. More and more Confederate soldiers were running away. Some returned to their homes. Others surrendered to Union forces. Confederate leaders no longer could find soldiers to take the places of those who left. Men would not answer the Army's call. There was, however, a huge labor force in the South that the Army had not called. Slaves.
Slaves had been used to do non-military work for the Army. They had built roads and bridges. They had driven wagons. But they had not served as soldiers. In the North, thousands of free Negroes served in the Union Army, but they received less pay than white soldiers. Confederate lawmakers finally began to discuss the idea of using slaves as soldiers. A bill was proposed that would free any slave who joined the army to fight. Many Southern leaders opposed the bill, even if it would save the Confederacy. Said one, "Do not arm the slaves. The day you make them soldiers is the beginning of the end of the Revolution. If slaves make good soldiers, our whole idea of slavery is wrong."
General Robert E. Lee did not agree. He believed slaves could be made into good soldiers if they believed they had an interest in Confederate victory. He proposed giving immediate freedom to any slave who joined the army. The Confederate Congress passed a bill in March of 1865 to accept Negroes as soldiers. The bill did not promise to free them. By then, however, it was too late. An army of freed slaves could not be trained in time to save the Confederacy.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.